Ireland is getting older. That presents a unique set of challenges that we, as a nation, as a population, are going to have to rise to. I'm Peter Kavanagh, and this is The Old Country, a podcast about ageing in Ireland brought to you by Active Retirement Ireland, in association with the Community Foundation, as part of the UN Decade of Healthy Ageing. Welcome to The Old Country. I'm Peter Kavanagh. COVID-19 has been a crisis for older people throughout the country, and older people's organisations are, in essence, struggling to bounce back. And I'm joined by Active Retirement Ireland's Chief Executive Officer, Maureen Kavanagh, to discuss Active Retirement's response and how the sector as a whole can coalesce and try and build a better Ireland for older people in the wake of what has been, I suppose fair to say, Maureen, the single greatest pandemic we've ever faced, certainly, but maybe the single greatest occurrence that has happened in living memory that has really rocked us as a society.
Yes, Peter, I agree. As an organisation and leading an organisation which is membership-led, made up of older people, Active Retirement Ireland couldn't have planned for this. It couldn't have done any risk assessments around it. It was something that wasn't in our psyche to think that effectively the grassroots of the organisation closes its doors, March 2020.
Yeah.
And every single one of the 520 local active retirement associations, guts of 24,000 members, stopped their social activities. They stopped their physical activities. They stopped their learning activities. They stopped having fun. They stopped socialising. They stopped meeting friends and going places. They stopped contributing to the economy because they were on lockdown.
Yeah, not just the economy, but society as a whole as well.
Like, and like, as we, volunteers.
Yeah. And we've spoken at length on the podcast about this, about how you go to not just Active Retirement, but any volunteer organisation around the country. And chances are, you know, better than even money, that it's older people that are the lifeblood of these organisations. It could be Lions Club, it could be Rotary, it could be Tidy Towns, it could be ICA, Men's Sheds. And again, just when older people over a certain age were asked, and we have talked with Paddy Connolly earlier on in the series, Paddy Connolly from Age Action, we spoke to him earlier on about how, you know, there was a tinge of ageism to that. We understood that maybe it was with the best of intentions, but when you ask everybody over a certain age to cocoon, to shut themselves away from society, to stop doing what they're doing, and when you do that to a group of people simply because of, you know, a date on a calendar because of their age, that there is a hint of ageism to that, and I think it's hard to get away from that as well.
There is. I think we might as well call a spade and say absolutely it was for public health reasons. People that were vulnerable, people over the age of 70, were on a strict cocoon. It wasn't just restrictions and lockdown. Cocooning was the term that was used for the first two lockdowns of the pandemic. And it effectively put older people over the age of 70 and those that were vulnerable with health conditions behind their doors. And these people would have been the lifeblood of their communities. As you said, Peter, you named out the organisations they would have volunteered in, and you could have added to that list as well. And you know, the saddest thing was that as the community call was put in place, and a wonderful initiative where people were brought together in the communities to reach out that hand of friendship and support to the more vulnerable people in their communities, they were reaching out to a lot of our members. They were reaching out to the over 70s who would have been at the core of that community call, except for the lockdown, because they were age 70. And we have had stories from members as the lockdowns eased that they would have volunteered for the contact tracing and were accepted, delighted they could do this work from their home,
but all of a sudden,
on their phones, but once
you're
they gave
70.
Their age,
you can't
couldn't
do it.
Yeah. You know, there are questions that need to be asked and will be asked when we take the learnings from what we've learned as a society around the lockdown.
That's interesting, you know, this idea of what we've learned as a society from lockdown after lockdown after lockdown, from our pandemic response. Do you feel that we've seen maybe older people slip off the radar a little bit? You know, because I know that the discussion in recent months has been around the various lobby groups, and that they've been heard, and you know, government is listening to the restaurateurs, government is listening to the hoteliers. Even a few months ago, government is listening to the wedding industry. But government isn't maybe listening to the NGOs, it's not listening to children's organisations, it's not listening to older people's organisations. So have we seen maybe how far low down, you know, how far down the list of priorities older people are?
Oh, absolutely. And it's very concerning. And you're right. I mean, it is older people's organisations that aren't being listened to. It is children's organisations. I mean, if you look at what children's organisations were saying around needing to resume the summer camps and that because of the way children were out of the schools for so long, and the whole socialisation is so important. And it was recognised. And it was recognised by government ministers, the importance of trying to get summer camps back. And then somewhere along the line, they thought, oh, we better include bingo, because, you know, bingo is so important for older people. OK, it was a step. But again, there was that.
It's a little lazy, isn't it? It's
yeah,
a little
lazy. And that stereotypical older person at the bingo hall back. So, yes, we are still struggling to get clarity on what older people can return to, because there is the generic information. Except, of course, in August now, if you're at a wedding, suddenly due to a lobby group from the wedding planners and brides, that you are able to have your wedding increased indoors to 100. So is that what we have to do? To get on the streets again, to say, don't forget about us, we're not invisible.
But we can't get on the streets.
No.
And maybe it's the most inopportune time to need to lobby government, the fact that people power can't be demonstrated. And
well,
so
yes,
you
Peter.
End up with very small but influential lobby groups being heard.
Yeah.
And genuine cohorts of people in society, and not just older people, younger people, people with disabilities, lots of different segments of society, who are now in a position where they really can't demonstrate just how badly affected they've been, because, you know, for the good of public health, we all have to pull in together, and we can't really rally. We can't really get together.
But there's also that sense within older people, and that's the only experience I will come from on this one. I'm not saying it's not there with other cohorts, but there's a sense within older people going, look, you know, OK, we did it. And if we have to do it, we'll do it again, because we were all safe and we survived and we lost a lot of people. But there is that sense that being sort of afraid to speak out because it's such a serious issue and it's such a public health issue. And I suppose not speaking out is contributing that silence that is adding to the ageism that is happening. We know that older people are active, we know the voters, but they're also very compliant.
Yeah. And I suppose there is another, maybe the elephant in the room, maybe something people aren't as comfortable talking about, but if you do speak out against public health restrictions, not even against public health restrictions, but if you dare to raise a question as to how your group might have been treated, you're all of a sudden lumped in with some very unsavoury types who are out there protesting everything and anything to do with lockdowns and vaccines, and all of a sudden you may accidentally find yourself on the same side of the street as some very shady characters altogether, and that's something people want to avoid, I suppose.
It is, and those conversations haven't happened yet, and they're going to happen, and in some cases it might be exclusionary for some older people who would be vocal around, I didn't agree with what happened to me, I didn't agree with being locked down, I didn't agree with cocooning, and to be seen into that cohort of people that are opposed to everything. So yeah, Peter, you're right, and conversations have to be had. They have to be had within our active retirement associations as they start to come back, about the impact that COVID has had on themselves, on their community, on their local group, and on their vision of the future. And until we have those conversations, it's going to be very difficult for people to move on. But we cannot go forward without reflecting on what happened. We can't. Otherwise, we're sweeping it on as under the carpet as if it's unimportant.
One thing we are constantly in danger of sweeping under the carpet, as you say there, and it's really the correct turn of phrase here. But as a society, I think we're not very good at being open and honest about maybe the bad things, the losses that we've experienced, the grief that we've all gone through throughout the pandemic. And do you feel that there is another conversation to be had around that side of things, you know, the amount of not just members of Active Retirement, but their families, their friends, even just acquaintances, people they would have known through their communities, through their activities in different groups. But a lot of people have felt loss, and we may be perhaps in danger of trying to bounce back very quickly without acknowledging and accepting that loss and that grief and that pain.
I think so. One thing Ireland was always very good at was funerals and grieving.
Yeah.
That hasn't happened in lockdown. Mm. It's been very restricted numbers and it's been very quick, very in, very out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? People, yeah, it's been really, really 25 difficult.
25 people, 50 people at a funeral.
Yes,
no
and
wakes.
No wakes and no shaking hands afterwards or gatherings or going back to the local venue for a bowl of soup and a sandwich.
Sandwiches,
and a reflection and storytelling.
Yeah.
About somebody's life. Mm. And it's a celebration of somebody's life. But all we have experienced in COVID has been somebody's death. Yeah. And no chance to reflect on the life that that person had. And that's a very, very sad reflection on ourselves as society as well. And we need to come back from that. And there are some brilliant support programs. The Irish Hospice Foundation has a great program on bereavement, and people can find further information about that on the Irish Hospice Foundation's website. So there are supports there for people to talk about, but it's like two pieces, you know, of a puzzle.
Mm.
One is that how we couldn't celebrate people's lives as we lost them in the normal way that we always did, but on the other side, there is the whole aspect of the amount of people who passed away and died, people dying in nursing homes, over 2,000 deaths since COVID in nursing homes, and the impact that that has had on people and not being able to visit relatives and friends in their last days, again, has had a massive impact, a mental health impact. People.
And we've seen this in not just older people, but of course one of the big conversations throughout the summer has been how other aspects of society reopened, but maternity restrictions remained in place, and the effect that that would have had on, in particular, the women involved, mothers, you know, pregnant people, people going in for their appointments, going in to give birth, in some instances even going in to miscarry, and not having that emotional support nearby. So I think a lot of sectors of society would empathise and have felt that and have realised that we have not had the opportunity to share in that sorrow and to make that experience that little bit better for other people, that that's been absent. And we may need to address that. But how do we address that before we get back to normal? Before we just say, right, lads, that's done. Back to bowls, back to walking, back to cards, back to bingo, whatever you're into. How do we have that conversation? And what role do our local groups, do our local active retirement groups play in that?
I would hope to see that as the groups start to resume and as they start to come back in, that people can have those conversations and have that conversation. Well, what was it like for you? And how did you get on? Because this is how it was for me.
Mm.
And to start that, then that takes brave people too. So I think the national organisation, Active Retirement Ireland, has a role to support people to begin what we're going to have to call the big conversation. Because it's going to have to happen across many, many levels, because we can't move forward if we do not acknowledge the awful, awful impact that the last 18 months has had on all our lives. It's about the death in our communities, the death in our families. It's about not celebrating major events.
Yeah.
It's not being able to celebrate the birth of grandchildren and hold those grandchildren as they were birthed for many, many months. It's about seeing grandchildren through the window.
Yeah. And
even feel myself swelling up when I remember seeing my grandchild through the window and not being able to hold him.
Yeah.
And he was crying and I was crying. And like, this is not us.
Yeah.
We are communities. We are social creatures.
Yeah.
You know, this is what we do. So it has been awful. And as we strive to get back, we do need to have that space. We need to say, hold on for a minute. Actually, let's get off the treadmill for a second. Let's not rush back into trying to create what we think is normal, because we need to create something different.
A new normal.
A new normal, a new way, a new approach, new behaviours, yeah. Everything.
What are we going to take from the last 18 months that is positive? I mean, one of the things that springs to mind is that a lot of the older people's groups around the country, they've had to be really innovative when it comes to staying in contact.
Yes, Peter, I would say to you, if you asked me 2 years ago, how many of our members would know what WhatsApp was?
Yeah.
Would they put Zoom into their conversation? Possibly if they thought the car was speeding down the road. However, these have become normal.
Yeah.
These words, these applications.
Yeah.
We would have resisted moving events to online or even hybrid events, yeah, because we'd say, no, we're going to be leaving somebody behind.
Yeah.
And yes, people were left behind as many organisations move their events and programmes online. But many more embraced it. And that's one thing we must learn from our older people in society. They weren't afraid to embrace these new technology when it became real for them,
yeah,
as a means of communications. They may resist them if the post office is closing down the road and the bank, and you're being told, well, do your banking online. No, you don't tell me what to do.
Yeah.
But when it becomes a means of communication and a means of keeping in touch.
So like when it's vital, when it becomes actually you have to do this.
Or when it becomes real, yeah, as in
relevant.
Actually relevant and real.
Yeah.
Not so much when I have to do it. It okay. is. This is real for me. I need to do this if I want to actually keep in touch. And the stories that we heard from groups around the country, and one particular story I was very struck with. The group were using WhatsApp as a means of passing jokes, telling stories, having great crack on WhatsApp.
Yeah.
But there was one particular person who spent the last few weeks in hospital, not from COVID, but from another, yeah, health condition. And as their health deteriorated and they weren't able to get the visits from families or friends, they were able to have their Android phone and they were able to go on WhatsApp. And their ARA kept that person going in hospital when nobody else could visit, with jokes, stories, recipes, yeah, pictures, everything.
It's amazing, really, because as you say, if I'd asked you 2 years ago, you just could not have imagined that. And I suppose, so the main question is, like, what do we take from it? And how do we ensure that where there were people, because you did say people have been left behind, and it is important to acknowledge that. So what's the next step then? Do you go back, identify those people who are left behind and empower them to come along? Do you try and find a new way of working that straddles both of those cohorts, the people who never bothered with the technology and the people who sort of accepted it when it was thrust upon them during the pandemic? Or how do we move forward with these new ways of working, with these new methods that are open to us, with these new ways of being in contact with each other?
We combine them.
Yeah.
We do multiple methods. I'm currently the board of Active Retirement Ireland, fantastic board and set of trustees that they are for the organisation, providing fantastic leadership, and all through the pandemic moved very swiftly to working on by Zoom, mm, so that the governance of the organisation could be upheld,
yeah,
and they were providing great leadership on that. But they are dying to go back to a physical meeting because they just feel, I need to look somebody in the eye,
mm,
I need to see a facial expression, I need to see physical movement, and I just need to be in the room with somebody. So I think that we will certainly have blended ways,
yeah,
of working, and I think we can bring blended methodologies into multiple programmes. But certainly we must not forget that the importance of being together.
Yeah.
And that's really, really important, and no piece of modern technology can replace the actual being together, laughing together, having a joke.
Reading someone's body language. You know, so much of communication is nonverbal. A huge amount of communication is nonverbal. And I think there was a novelty aspect to a lot of the technology. I think a lot of families would have embraced the Zoom quiz as a way of staying in touch with each other throughout the early days of the lockdown. But I think once the novelty wore off, that you know, it sort of, it waned a little bit, and there weren't so many Zoom quizzes or Zoom meetings or the likes for families, for social groups, for friend groups and the likes. Zoom drinks started off with a bang and maybe wasn't a thing by the end of 2020. So I think nothing, I think it's easily understood that nothing replaces that physically being together. But it is exciting in a way that there are people maybe who for other reasons can't join a physical meeting, but that they have the opportunity,
yes,
to tune in, to take part, to be part of the conversation without, maybe they're not able, maybe they're physically not able to join a meeting. Maybe they're worried. And I think there will be a huge sense of worry in society for many months and years to come around catching COVID-19 or catching coronavirus or catching anything else, catching the flu during flu season. Our consciousness is you know, it's more in tune now with diseases, with washing our hands, with using face coverings and the like. So there's many reasons why someone might not be at a physical meeting. But it is exciting that there's opportunities for them still to take part.
There is. And I mean, there's things like one of the things that our active retirement members are very good at, going on the short breaks and the day trips. Mm. And those sort of things are important. But how and ever, imagine a world where you have an active retirement group going on a day trip to the museum or to a beautiful site, and somebody brings their smartphone and videos, some of it, and they're able to share that for people who couldn't make it. Maybe ill health, maybe a disability, maybe just couldn't do it on the day. Like, that's the sort of blended approach that we would love to see. Like, and that's where we should be heading,
yeah,
in the future, that nobody gets left behind.
Yeah, it's exciting. You know, it is. So in order to make sure that nobody gets left behind, obviously the organisation, you know, Active Retirement, it has to bounce back. It has to try and come back stronger than ever before. What are the plans? What are the hopes? What are the dreams of the organisation? How does the near future look for Active Retirement?
I just want to tell you a story.
Okay.
I was at an event this week. It's the first physical event of an Active Retirement Association in 15 months. It was the launch of a cookbook called The Taste of Friendship, pulled together by the members of Sure Active Retirement down there in the Dacia in Waterford. And the event was celebrated by members of other local Active Retirement Associations coming together. And the joy and the laughter and the friendship and the beautiful clothes on both the men and the women who are at it, the colour.
I think if I could get one emotion from the way you're talking about it, the relief as well.
The relief, the absolute joy of being together. You very, very hard to describe now. It was just fantastic.
So I should clarify, just in case we get completely outstripped by current events between recording and this going out, we are speaking at the very tail end of July, and this event happened at the end of July. And the first physical event by almost any Active Retirement group, really. There
yes.
have been a few outdoor events, of course.
Yes.
Groups had gotten back together for their walking groups, for their outdoor activities. But this was the first major event, the first one that the president was invited to, the first one you were invited to as chief executive in over 15 months.
Absolutely. Indeed it was. And all within the restrictions that are allowed currently at this period of time that we're in. But it was just the pure joy of being together. And that, to me, is what we need to bring back in the organisation. We need to make sure that people are encouraged to come back within all the health and safety precautions that we need to have in place.
Mm.
We need to encourage people that are fearful to just have that conversation and will I, won't I. We would encourage members to buddy up and bring someone along. Bring someone who might be that little bit more nervous than maybe another member is, to come along. Put your toe into the water and chance different things. I think our active retirement groups will have to revisit how they are holding their meetings, we'll say. And they will have to hold them in different fashions and in different ways. But I think they're learning that as well, and they will do that. I mean, the big thing is about getting back to the physical activities and to the sporting activities. And one thing I can tell you, it has highlighted, Active Retirement Ireland has been running a major sporting event for older people for 10 years. our national bowls competition.
Yeah, of course.
We've always struggled to get it recognised as a sport for older people, a team sport, and have it recognised in that way. However, funny enough, our active retirement groups can't go back to bowls at the moment because it's now classed as a sporting activity.
Yeah.
So again, there is this
weird dichotomy
that we sit in, and it's like older people, because you don't you're not there in the sitting room sitting by the fire in the old vision of what older people are supposed to be. It's like nobody knows where to put them.
Yeah.
Now, but I'll tell you one thing, older people know where to put themselves. So they need to be listened to.
Let them have a voice.
No better people to say, you know what I mean, what it is that is needed and what they want.
And in essence, that's kind of your role, you know, as an organisation, Active Retirement Ireland. The role is to give voice to older people themselves. You mentioned at the top of the interview, membership led, and you know, the decisions that Active Retirement takes as regards getting back, it's going to be informed by that voice, by older people themselves.
Absolutely. Yes, indeed, Peter. And we're voluntary led, we're grassroots. We have teams of volunteers out across the regions. We have voluntary development officers, regional committees, and they will all run events that are based on what the members are looking for. As you said already, some of our groups resumed outdoor activities when it was safe to do so. They did so last summer as well, towards the tail end, when it was safe to do walking beyond the 5 kilometres and that. So it was. They will do what is safe. They will do what the members are looking for. And we will return. We will return to good activities. We will return to active communities where older people are at the core. Because I can't imagine a society without older people being at the core.
Well, that's it. And like, it's something that's come up time and time again on this particular podcast, just how central older people are to our communities, to society, but maybe completely unrecognised for that. And part of what we try and do on the podcast is just address how policy can support that then, what needs to be in place for that to happen. And it just seems to be, and I don't mean to preempt your answer on this, but it really seems to be that if the people, the policymakers, the ones who are making the decisions, if they just listen, the answers are already there.
The answers are there, exactly, Peter. If they just listen to what older people have to say, the answers are there. But if also they just implement the National Positive Ageing Strategy sitting on a shelf since 2013,
yeah,
it's a good framework for how we're all going to age. This isn't about older people of today.
Yeah.
This is about how we're all going to age. And I would ask people to consider, like, what way do you want to get old in this country?
Mm.
And that will tell you the answer about what policies need to be in place.
I think it's fair to say there's a big challenge ahead, but you seem excited to take it on.
Yes, Active Retirement is going to be at the core and at the centre of this. We also work with 6 other organisations in an alliance, and we've just produced a really good, very great document called Telling It Like It Is, which is about telling the stories. As with what we were talking about earlier, older people telling the stories of what it was like. But we need to move those stories into action. Otherwise, that's where they sit. They just become stories.
Mm.
But we need to move those into what is Ireland going to look like to be a country to grow old in, to grow old well? Because that is going to be, do you want to grow old dependent, or do you want to grow old an independent person? Well, then we need policies to back that up. And we need investment in the country to ensure that all parts of our society are a good place for all of us to age.
Maureen Kavanagh, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Old Country is recorded in the podcast studios, McGuinness Place, Dublin 2. For more information, check out thepodcaststudios.ie. This podcast is brought to you by Active Retirement Ireland as part of the UN Decade of Healthy Ageing. This podcast is supported by the Community Foundation for Ireland, and thanks, as always, to our media partners, Alice PR.